Good morning. Hello. Is this thing on? Hello. Hello. Hello.
Can you get some volume on this thing? Can you hear?
Can you hear? All right. Good morning. We have a quorum. Today is Wednesday, August 7th, 2019. The time is 9:08, and I now call this meeting of the Dallas City Council to order. We're going to begin with an invocation, followed by the pledges, plural, of allegiance, led by Councilman Adam Bazaldua. And so I will now introduce our speaker this morning who's going to give us our invocation, Reverend Jerry Christian of Kirkwood Temple Church, which is located in District 3, represented by the great Casey Thomas. Reverend Jerry Christian has been the senior pastor of Kirkwood Temple for the past 25 years. He's originally from Boonville, Mississippi, and he's lived in Dallas for the past 25 years. He's a graduate of the University of Mississippi and earned a master's degree from the Memphis Theological Seminary and is a doctor of ministry, which he earned from the McCormick Theological Seminary. He's a very active member of the Dallas community. He served 10 years on the Dart Board, 12 years on the Texas College Board, 12 years as the president of the African Americans Pastor Coalition, and perhaps most importantly, he is a life member of the greatest fraternity in the history of mankind, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, of which Eric Johnson and Casey Thomas are also life members. So without further ado, Reverend Christian, please come and give us our invocation. Everyone, please rise.
Let us pray. Holy One, known by many names and beyond all names, Spirit of life, Spirit of love, Spirit of community, Spirit of justice, we ask your blessings on the people who have been called to lead the community in which we live, work, and play. Help them as leaders to not ask first, how do we fix this, but what do we need to learn? How might we need to change, and to whom do we need to listen? Remind them, because we all forget from time to time, especially in the noisiness of what passes for political debate today, that they are not only leaders but also servants, and that it is their responsibility and ours to serve the common good of all. Remind them that no matter where we live, everyone, gay, straight, transgender, black or white, Hispanic or Asian, Muslim or Jew, Hindu or atheist, is our neighbor, our sibling, and that throughout the ages, perhaps prophets have called the leaders of the people to respect and protect the least of these among us, our children, the elderly, the poor, those who are hungry, those who have no homes, those who are ill in body, mind, or spirit, the strangers and immigrants in our midst, those who live on the margins, those who are alone, those who are forgotten. Grant them and us the wisdom and courage to know and do what is right and good and true. May they and we speak out when it is time to speak and listen patiently and receptively when it is time to listen. May they and we always be guided by the spirit of community, by the spirit of justice, and by the spirit of love. This we pray. In the name of all that we hold sacred and holy, all that we hold good and right and true, in the name of the triune God, but in particularly for me, in the name of Jesus the Christ, we pray. Amen.
Amen. Now, if we'll remain standing, we'll have the pledges of allegiance to the United States flag and to the Texas flag led by Councilman Bazaldua.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. And I'm going to ask we stay standing for one more thing, and that is to show solidarity with our fellow Texans in the case of El Paso and our fellow Americans in the case of Dayton, Ohio. Let's observe a moment of silence for those who were killed and a moment of silence and recognition of those who were also injured in the recent shootings in El Paso, Texas and Dayton, Ohio. Thank you. You may be seated. Chair recognizes Councilman Magoo for an announcement.
Thank you, Mayor and colleagues. This morning I have the opportunity to do as what we've done the last 3 years and recognize some of the outstanding community servants, leaders, people that have served the community, and that are true upstanders in our city, and specifically in District 10, but in many cases across our whole city. Some of you had the opportunity to meet, but Blake Anderson was an upstander himself. He was someone that absolutely loved life. He came and worked with me on my campaign. He came and worked in my office here representing District 10 at the city. And he is the son of two people I respect greatly, and I'd ask if Dr. Richard Anderson and Michelle Anderson would come up as we honor his life and legacy. I want to thank Dr. Anderson and Michelle for allowing me to even the blessing of knowing your son, but then to be able to honor people in our community in his name. The goal is to continue to remember him for what he did and the servant that he was. And in many regards, we talk about it often, but still is an inspiration in so many ways in the things that we do here in the city. And so this, to honor his death and life, this time of year, we pick people from the community that have lived up to the standard that Blake lived up to as an upstander. And I'll tell you what is inscribed on this award. It says, named in the honor of Daniel Blake Anderson, a true public servant and dear friend whose legacy continues to inspire. The Blake Anderson Public Service Award recognizes the sacrificial service of dedicated public servants who work for community over self, bring people together for good, and embody the true meaning of love your neighbor. And so what I'll do, we had a ceremony this morning for breakfast so that we could more appropriately honor the service of each. But I'd ask if, as I call their name, they would come forward. And then if we could come together and just take a picture with this group, I'd appreciate that from you. But the award recipients this year include Sam Merton and Bill Boyd, Quincy Bradley, April Wallace, Barbara Ragosa, Daniel Chrysler, Jolie Robinson, Jerry Baker, James White, Jason Simon, and PJ Meidel. And, like, it's one of our core values to take care of the kids and family. And so we appreciate those that need Elmo occasionally. There's a few times around this horseshoe we may need Elmo. I also ask my family who's here, Lacey McGew, Noah, Cooper, and Eli, and family of Blake that has just continued to love this community and love us well. And then as we affectionately refer to as little Q, lowercase Q. With that, I want to thank you, all of you again for being here this morning. Thank you for what you do in the community, how you stand up and fight injustice, and how you continue to answer the call each and every time, whether it's cutting tree limbs in a yard or whether it's giving advice and counsel to people that need it, whether it's fighting for those who can't fight for themselves, whether it's using your life experience to impact and inspire those around us. I'm just incredibly thankful. It's really in the honor and in where Blake got his heart from is from Dr. Anderson and Michelle, who have done exactly this, been upstanders in the community. Dr. Anderson, one of the lead surgeons in trauma at Presbyterian Hospital, and has saved numerous lives and continues to impact in so many ways. And Michelle Anderson, who has been engaged in more community support events, from the Holocaust Museum to so many Irish funds and everything. If it's doing something good in the city, you'll find her name attached to it. And so, again, thank everybody for this privilege to be able to honor you in this way. And if we could somehow get our colleagues to come around and take a picture with this group, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, one final announcement, and this one, for those of you who are attorneys in the room and on the council, you'll remember how important it was when you were in law school to have internship experiences or clerkship experiences to give you some legal experience. And so I want to welcome some folks today who are interning with our Dallas City Attorney's Office. We have Kimberly Hale, Kimberly Rojas, and Abby Brown. If you could stand if you're here. There we are. They are interning in our city attorney's office, and this is the third and final session of our internship program that we have with the UNT School of Law. So thank you so much for working with us this summer, and hopefully you'll go on to a great legal career, possibly with the city attorney's office, but I don't make those decisions. So I'm not offering you a job, but I am saying good luck to you in your career. So thank you so much for being with us today. That ends our announcements, and now I will turn this over to the city secretary for our open microphone speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning. This morning, your first five registered speakers will be Kendall Richardson, Beverly Preen, Brandy Moore, Daryl Blair, and Yvette Balazé. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your questions to Mayor Johnson only. Also, if you have a handout, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker is Kendall Richardson.
Good morning. My name is Kendall Richardson. Mayor Johnson and members of the council, I want to thank you for allowing me to address this body. I'm here to give a moral call that we need God's intervention in Dallas. On October 8th, I'm proposing an event called a call to prayer. Prayer is a vehicle that brings the human race to be unified on one accord. We are all saddened by the atrocities that have happened in El Paso, Dayton, Ohio, Gilroy, California, in Dallas, and all around the world. The problem is not afar off here in Dallas. On July 7, 2016, Micah Xavier Johnson ambushed and fired upon a group of police officers, killing five, injuring nine others. Two civilians were wounded. The shooting was the deadliest incident for U.S. law enforcement since September 11, 2001 attack. Recently, former city council member Carolyn Davis and her daughter were both killed by a drunk driver with five priors driving on the wrong side of the road. And what breaks my heart the most is the continuous murdering of children under the age of 4 years old. One horrific event, 18-month-old Cedric Johnson's dead body was discarded in a dumpster like a piece of trash, an innocent life taken away too soon by domestic violence. The only way we can stop these atrocities is for all communities to come together, and that's why I'm asking you, Mayor Johnson, and the City Council to host this day of prayer at City Hall. Dallas is an influential city. We need to show the rest of the world that we are united and that we are examples of love. I've begun the process of requesting a permit through the Department of Special Events. Please answer the needs of your city and host this day of prayer.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Beverly Preen. Beverly Preen. Not present. Brandy Moore. Brandy Moore. Not present. Dara Blair.
Good morning to the mayor, to the city council, to the city manager, to the city secretary, and to those of you who are here in this room. My name is Daryl Blair. I'm the publisher of Elite News here in Dallas, Texas. I'm the seventh of seven children of William and Moselle Blair, most notably William Blair, my father. I want to speak on two issues this morning, rather briefly. The first and foremost issue is putting teeth in your ordinance. The prevailing word in this room this morning has been related to children. He talked about praying for children who had loss of life. We speak of the children that just came up here to take pictures with family members and whatnot. Back in early July, a young man lost his life by the name of Ricky Tave. I certainly want each and every one of you city council members sitting here in the mirror to recognize the importance of putting teeth in your ordinance. Panhandling ordinance. If that panhandling ordinance had been enforced, we may very well not be looking at this kid as a goner, as deceased, and we in turn trying to uphold his legacy as a young man. Don't let this kid die in vain. I say that to say this. Let's get these children out of the street. That's not fundraising. That's panhandling. That's not fundraising. That's begging. You're opening these kids up to a litany of things, not just being, might possibly getting hit by a car or things like that. You got pedophiles and everything riding around in these cars, and they sit up here and they'll ride, turn that corner 15 times and give a quarter to look at a little boy or a little girl. We're going to have to put teeth into that. That will take away from some of your crime rate that you're trying to minimize. More importantly, these communities don't need that. If these kids are going to be a part of a program, that's not for you to police. That's for their parents to police. But we have to put some moral compasses in place and say, hey, this is not right. We're not going to put these kids or weigh them in into the middle of this. It's going to be some fundraising. Be organized about it. Be professional. Finally, I want to talk about the MLK parade. My father started that parade some 30 years ago, and it's been gone for the last few years. You're looking at a survivor, not of cancer or of any other ailment. You're looking at a survivor who has had to survive at the hands of losing this parade on my watch. My father, my brother passed, and all of a sudden the parade is gone. It's taken from me. We won't go into the dialogue about it. I'll talk to each and every one of you individually. I'm asking you simply not to return the parade to the Elite News, to the Blair family. No, I'm asking you to return the parade to the people. It's the people's parade. More importantly, I want to be fair about it.
put the parade out for bid. It was out for bid, and they removed it once the Blairs and the Elite News came up as the bidders who would win that bid. I'm asking you to put it out in fairness to anyone else who might want to put on the MLK parade. And I certainly would be more than happy to support them if we lost in that bid. I know that we'll get it. It's only fair and it's only right. I thank you, the Dallas City Council, the mayor. I thank each and every one of you, and I look to dialogue each and every one of you as it relates to this parade. God bless and God keep.
Thank you.
Yvette Balazé.
Hey, everybody. My name is Yvette Balazé. First, to respond to the last speaker, that young man that qualified to nationals in track, he was not a panhandler or a beggar. He was a champion, and his parents were doing the best that they could to raise money so these kids could go to nationals. Now, if we could stop having people like Carolyn Davis taking bribe money and stealing from our community, leaving nothing for our kids, okay, then maybe our kids would have some more resources. So let's start there with the integrity of everybody up here, okay? All right. So can Dallas protect our children? I want to talk about Luna School. It's in a bar district. If it's illegal to open up a school, I mean a bar near a school, it should not be appropriate to open up a school in a bar district. Now, I'm asking if you can please work to move this school of mainly children of immigrants. Bar owners oppose the school because Deep Ellum bearded Nazis are who the children have to be around, like Austin Sheffield, who beat up a woman right by the school where he worked, okay? Third, I want to talk about DISD. They need a follow-up with parents. It's beyond inappropriate for Adam Bazalduit to post on Skyline High School website the phrase sticky buns food pornography to describe the kids' baked bread. Bazalduit also praises and promotes pedophile Anthony Bourdain online. Parents at Skyline High School need to be aware that teacher Adam Bazalduit introduced their kids.
Point of order, Mayor.
I'm sorry? You
point
have it
order.
Right in front of you. The DISD report is right in front of you. Okay.
Point of order.
He had, so, okay.
I'm sorry.
There's a subculture of foodgasms and
excuse
food
me.
Porn that is, if
ma'am.
It's uncomfortable to talk about it here, the
we're,
kids don't need to hear
we're
it.
We're
going
to ask you to refrain from actually referring to any members of this body by name.
I need my time back.
Okay. We're going to ask you to just refrain from using people's names.
Okay. Council member over District 7, okay. When he was a teacher, okay. He was introducing the kids to a subculture of foodophiles that get foodgasms from food pornography. Principal Dr. Lombardi told me she removed all of District 7 council members' pornography references from the Skyline High School website. True. But I was also told that parents would be notified and children would be spoken to about his behavior, and this is yet to be done. We need to protect our children. In that DISD report, council member over District 7 injured a little girl by twisting her arm. He had her in tears, calling her a baby. She was scared and hurt enough to kick him in the groin. In the DISD report, council member over District 7 discredited the Latina student and said her mother didn't speak good English. Okay, to me, that's a racist deflection from his own actions. DISD needs to protect the child, not the predator. All right, and last, we need to clean up the crime. DPS is doing it. So council members need to quit calling our DPS officers racist. You're following the rhetoric of a John Wiley Price, Commissioner over District 3. Councilmember over 7, Councilmember over District 7, said that our DPS officers are racist profilers. And
thank
our district,
you.
They're saving
expired.
Our life,
you,
and we don't appreciate it. And you've
thank
called
you.
Us animals and a
citizen. Thank you.
You're
thank you very much. Your time's expired. Thank you very much, ma'am. Thank you.
Reggie Ruffin. Not present. Gregory Demas.
Good morning, everyone. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. My subject today is going to be about sanitation, something that a lot of us experienced for the last 2 months here in the city of Dallas. I wish I could have showed pictures. If he was in the chamber, I would have been able to show the pictures, but I can't show the pictures now. What I'm asking the city of Dallas to do is hold up his side of the bargain. What I mean by the bargain, everybody in here or everybody in the city of Dallas that has a water bill pays a sanitation fee on that water bill for bulk trash and weekly trash pickup. For 2 months, I did not get my trash picked up. I live in District 3, Twin Oaks Neighborhood Association, which I'm the president. And I'm not speaking mainly of that association. I'm speaking mainly of myself. But of District 4, right now, There's an 8-foot pile of trash still in my mother's yard, and I know the sod is dead under it. I have a picture of sod, which I can't show, that's as big as that screen right now. Now, to replace that sod is going to cost probably about at least, I say, $75 worth of grass, fertilizer, and that. In my area, most of the people are senior citizens and own fixed income. That's no way they can afford to get that done. So this yard's just going to look bad for a while. If we don't pay our water bill or don't pay that, the city of Dallas is going to turn off our water. All of us in here have paid that for the month of June and the month of July, but we did not get the service that was agreed upon in that contract. I'm asking the city of Dallas, the mayor, to please consider some type of rebate or something on the water bills, whether you start it this month, next month, or down the road. But there should be some type of recognition. If we don't pay our part of the bill, we suffer. If we pay our part and don't get the pickup, it's not fair that the city doesn't reciprocate that same service back. I believe, and I'm not professional on this, though, but there should be some type of funds for tragic storms through the federal government that the city can recoup those funds from if you do lose from giving back this money to the citizens of Dallas. I'm asking that. Hopefully you can come through with it. Thank you.
Charles Mann.
Good morning. Charles Mann, 4515 Live Oak, Old East Dallas, District 2. Mr. Mayor, let's talk about public transportation in Dallas. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. I was especially happy to hear that you were appointed to be Vice Chair of Transit for Transit of the U.S. Mayor's Transportation and Communications Committee. I was also happy to read where you had to say what you had to say about regionalism and how it works where it works, but it doesn't always work for the citizens of Dallas. Mr. Mayor, can we be fully transparent about one thing? DART is a regional organization that calls itself a transportation company, but is, in fact, form and function, primarily a construction company. DART exists not to serve its riders. It exists to serve its clients, namely real estate developers who want to see DART expand so they can build out into the surrounding communities. I have come to the conclusion that in order to actually improve the quality of our bus service, what we will need is for DART to spin off the bus part of its operations into a separate public-private corporation that can and will be required to focus entirely on improving the quality and efficiency of bus service for riders, primarily but not exclusively, inside the city of Dallas. Then DART can focus on what it really wants to do, building out and up its rail system. Now, at first glance, that might appear to be a somewhat drastic thing to do, but when one considers how little the quality of our bus service has improved over the last 20-odd years, I believe the idea deserves some consideration and discussion. In conclusion, Mr. Mayor, I would like to challenge you and the council to do something for me. For just one day, leave your car at home and ride DART where you need to go. If you do that one thing, you'll be amazed. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes your first 5 registered speakers. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Agenda item 1 is approval of minutes of the June 17, 2019 special and inauguration meetings, June 18, 2019 city council meeting, and June 24, 2019 special call city council planning session.
Do you have a motion for approval? Any discussion?
Yes, please.
Okay. Councilwoman Mendelson.
I'd like to ask that our minutes from the planning session be that we include what our priorities were, since they were actually an action that we took to decide what those were. It was an action because we voted with those red dots, and so I would just like them to be included in what the minutes were.
Is that a motion?
It's a request.
I mean, I think we need the city manager to sort of...
I'm sorry, this is city secretary.
So
we typically do not place that level of information on a planning session or even our briefings, but if it's at the will of the council, we can adhere to Councilmember Mendelson's request.
I mean, I think it would have to be moved and seconded like anything else. Is it a motion?
So, yes, I'm going to move that we include... that we include the priorities that we selected.
Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. All any discussion on that?
Typically, for minutes, we don't include a discussion, but this was beyond a discussion because we had red dots and we showed our priorities, and then on the screen, we announced what our top priorities were, and I just believe that should be part of the public record.
Councilwoman Arnold.
I just had a quick question for clarity. Which session are we speaking of? The one in June?
Yes, the June 24th council planning session that was held at the library.
Okay, and we posted that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We posted the meeting.
Okay,
all right. I just wanted to make sure it was posted and as such. Thank you.
Councilman Kleiman.
Yes, I have a question for the city secretary. Is there any official city action taken at that meeting?
No.
Thank you.
Councilman Atkins.
Who was all present at that meeting?
Give me 1 second, I'm sorry.
In the meantime, Councilwoman Gates.
So a question regarding that meeting, I'm trying to pull them back up again, sorry. It's the date's the 24th, right? Is that the date, the 24th?
That's correct, sorry.
So now I have them pulled up. So I guess the action item would be today we would not adopt these, and then you would create the new minutes, correct?
Or I could.
These minutes just say, you know, the welcome. There's no details at all. So and I'm okay with you doing that, but we need to look at that before we approve that as well to make sure that we believe that what's reflective in those minutes is what really happened at the meeting.
Sure.
Correct. Yeah. So how would that happen? I'm just procedurally.
Then council would need to amend the motion to approve all minutes excluding June 24th, and we will bring the June 24th special call city council planning session minutes back to council for approval.
Because the 17th and the 18th, we could still pass those.
You're not
talking about amending those, is that right, Councilmember Mendelson? Okay, because that's the 17th. I think that was actually the old council, right? The inauguration meeting?
Yes, correct.
And then we had the council meeting.
On the 18th, correct.
On the 18th. And then which was the one?
The council briefing was on June 28th.
Right. So the 18th council meeting, though, was the one that was included this council. That was after the inauguration.
Correct.
The 17th was...
was inauguration and included both councils. If you look at the minutes, we have to reflect... the 9:15 meeting and the 10 o'clock inauguration.
Because there was the old council was on that one. But nobody had any amendments to those, so we just need to amend this motion then.
If that's the will of the council, yes.
Okay. So do I need to make a second motion
those two? Well, let me just make sure there's no more. Okay, so here's where we are procedurally. There's been a second motion made by Councilwoman Mendelson, and she's got to restate her motion. So everyone understands what that is, but that is the second motion. The first motion that was moved and seconded was the motion to approve the minutes, just plain approval of the minutes as they were presented. So the first thing we have to dispose of is this motion dealing with Councilwoman Mendelson's motion, which she needs to restate, and there's still some discussion from Councilmember Atkins here. So we're going to proceed with the discussion on that, dispose of that motion, and then move to the original motion. So Councilman Atkins.
I guess my question to Madam Secretary, do you find out who all present?
Correct. So the council members who were present at the June 24th planning session meeting was Mayor Johnson, Mayor Pro Tem McHugh, council members West, Thomas, Arnold, Blackman, Mendelson, Gates, and Blewett. Absent were Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, council members Resendez, Narvaez, Basildua, and Kleinman.
And the reason why I say that, you know, when it was first arrived for the special call meeting, to me was just to get the input because the other councilman was not present when the change over. My understanding was it was not a official quote meeting. It's just to give input, a suggestion. So I think it would be unfair because the other council member could not attend because they had a plane delay in Miami and they was not there. So I don't know where their priority was to do that. So I'll probably be voting no, you know, because it's more confusing. It was a courtesy. People show up to get an understanding. And that's what I thought the meeting was about, just a courtesy to let the new council member know what the old council member was talking about. I didn't know it was reinventing our priorities all over again. That was my understanding when I went there. Thank you.
Councilman Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we separate the so we can vote on these separately so we can go ahead and vote on the previous minutes it sounds like a consensus we can move forward on, and then we can discuss this one on its own.
So, let me just make sure there are already two motions.
I just consulted with the city attorney.
And what did they say?
They said, I'll let the city attorney explain.
Yeah. Mayor, that's fine. You can divide the question so that you could vote on the ones where that y'all are in agreement and then vote on that one, get that done. And then with respect to the minutes, then you can discuss that one. So you get the ones resolved where everyone is in agreement.
Okay. So it's been now moved and seconded that we divide the question. Any discussion on that? Okay. All in favor of dividing the question?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All in favor of dividing the question, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So the question has now been divided, and we will take up, I suppose, the minutes that are not the minutes from the June 24th.
I can restate it.
Yes.
So we're voting on approval of minutes of the June 17, 2019 special and inauguration meetings, June 18, 2019 City Council, and the June 18, 2019 City Council meeting.
Motion approved. So it's been moved and seconded.
Yeah.
Discussion, Councilwoman Gates.
Okay. On those minutes, the 9:20 meeting, or maybe it was 9:22 called, it has me as absent. I missed the canvassing committee, but I was there for that vote.
You're speaking of the June 17th
meeting that was
the 9 o'clock.
The 9 o'clock, yeah. I know there was traffic that day, and I was supposed to be at the canvassing meeting, and I know Mr. Medrano subbed for me for the canvassing, but I was there for the 9:15 meeting.
Well,
because I remember that was the last one. I took a picture of Mayor Rawlings. So
we can
I remember
correct,
sitting there for that meeting.
We can correct that.
But I was not at the canvassing, yeah.
Okay, we can correct that.
Okay, thanks.
So, procedurally, do we need to...
That's just a correction.
Correction.
That's just a correction.
So we are now voting on the approval of the June 17th and the June 18th minutes. And there's no more discussion. All in favor of approval of those minutes? Say, any opposed? The ayes have it. So the meeting minutes for those two meetings are approved. Now we are on to the special call planning session minutes from June 24th. And we'll continue with discussion. Any discussion? I'm not seeing any. So we'll move move to the vote on that. So the motion as originally stated is to just approve those minutes as they were submitted.
So the request is to bring to hold the approval of the June 24, 2019 special call City Council planning session meeting minutes and bring it back at the next meeting with reflected changes from the meeting.
Point of information, who made the motion and who did the second on that motion?
That's all I'm trying to track, too.
Kiara, and second.
No, that was to have an amendment on the floor, Mr. Mayor, not to defer this item.
City attorney? Or whoever
we'll just make the motion.
Kept track of that. The city attorney is our parliamentarian according to the rules, so please inform us as to...
She needs to amend the motion to make that request.
Okay. So, Councilwoman Mendelson, would you like to amend your motion?
I'd like to amend the minutes to include reflect the outcome of our discussion where we listed what our priorities were.
I'd like to make a sub-motion, please.
Sorry?
Can I make a sub-motion?
You need a second on that.
A second motion? A substitute motion to defer the item, please?
This motion has not been seconded from Councilwoman Mendelson yet, so it's been seconded by Councilman West. Discussion on that motion.
You can make another motion.
Councilman Basil Dua.
I'd like to make a motion to defer this item for 30 days, please.
Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Discussion on the motion from Councilman Basil Dua.
I think that we can iron out the amendments over time and not spend as much time right now in our briefing doing it.
Councilwoman Gates. We're now discussing Councilman Basil Dua's motion.
I don't understand. Deferring it is not giving any direction to changing it. So I think what Ms. Mendelson's request is we're going to amend it, so we're not going to discuss it today. You're going to go back and you're going to amend it and then bring it back to us, and we can approve it or not approve it.
Correct.
Is my understanding. So I could be supportive of that, but I do have a question related to do you feel like you have the information to be able to amend it?
I would have to get the information directly from council.
Because the meeting wasn't not recorded?
No, I'm sorry. No, it was recorded. Okay. It's just exactly what the council wants me to reflect in the minutes.
Oh, all the details.
Correct.
So we would need that discussion today. Okay. But if it's just deferred, what would you do with that motion?
If it's deferred for 30 days, we'll bring the item back in 30 days.
What item would you bring back, though?
We'll bring the minutes back.
And what would you – and you would have amended?
And it will have the information listed under that item that's on the agenda. Which – the council priorities as requested.
And it would be discussed at that time, or it would be discussed – or you would be – I'm still – yeah.
It would be discussed at that meeting. If it's the next meeting, if council wants me to bring the minutes back for approval at the next meeting or 30 days.
Seeing no more. Oh, Councilman Basil Dua.
So just for clarification, when the minutes come back, will the minutes now include what Councilwoman Mendelson is requesting?
Correct.
If it's deferred.
It's deferred 30 days or the next meeting, it will come back with the requested changes by Councilman.
Which is why I made the motion, Council.
Councilman Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I'm going to be voting no on the deferral. I think we need to go ahead and get this done today. And I'm also going to be voting no on the amendment simply for the fact that, one, I wasn't there because we were delayed on an airplane, so our information wasn't there. But number two is that it wasn't official business taken during the special called meeting. It was just to offer up information so that we could all take a look at it. It's all been recorded, so if anybody wants to take a look and see what somebody had offered as priorities, then that is not what belongs in our minutes because it's not official business because there was no vote taken on any of these or an acceptance of those items. So I'll be voting no on this. I'll be voting no on that, and I would entertain and definitely vote for just getting these minutes approved so we can get on to the real business of the people today. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Kleinman.
I agree with Councilman Narvaez, and we'll be voting similarly.
Thank you, Councilwoman Mendelson.
So just a final statement about this, that minutes are just a reflection of what happened at the meeting. And at the end of our meeting, we had a list of what our priorities were. And while everyone was not there, that's reflected also in the minutes of who was in attendance. and the nature of the meeting is also reflected in the minutes. So I'm just saying that the minutes should actually show what was discussed. And it was more than just a discussion.
You should be speaking to his specific motion at this point, because we've already had a discussion on that, and we're going to be moving to a vote on your motion. So do you have any further discussion on his motion?
No, I don't think.
Okay. All in favor of Councilman Basil Dua's motion to defer for 30 days, say aye.
Mr. Mayor, I can do a roll call if you would like.
Okay. Roll call vote's been requested. Roll call vote's been granted. Let's do a roll call vote.
No one did? Okay.
Then we'll just move on with the voice vote. All in favor? All opposed? No. Then the motion fails. Moving back to Councilwoman Mendelson's motion, we're going to move to the vote on that. Did anyone request a roll call on that? Okay, voice vote on that. All in favor? Yeah, this is on Councilwoman Mendelson's motion. All right, do you make a note of how many hands there are?
We're recording it.
All right, all opposed?
Motion fails.
The motion fails. We're now back to the original motion to adopt the minutes from the June 24th meeting. Seeing no more discussion, voice vote, unless anyone wants a roll call on that. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The minutes are adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We'll move to agenda item two. Oh,
that was fun. I like that. Yeah.
Agenda item two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning, we only have one full council appointment. Wesley Glenn Terrell is being requested for nomination by City Manager T.C. Broadnax to the North Texas Education Finance Corporation.
Do I have a motion for approval? It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The item's adopted.
Agenda item three, casting of lots to identify the recommended vendor resulting from tie bids between Nationwide Supplies LP and Animal Care Equipment and Services LLC on Group C, Line 1, in response to bid BT1909 for a 3-year master agreement for the purchase of animal control and animal shelter-related supplies for the Department of Dallas Animal Services. Mr. Mayor, you'll be asked to select an envelope. Do you have the envelope?
I have selected an envelope, and I'm going to open it and read it. This is so much more fun than state government, I tell you that. They never gave me any envelopes to pick from, you know, like this. Animal Care Equipment and Services, LLC. Group C, Line 1. That's what it says on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's no further action is required at this meeting. At a voting agenda meeting, the council will vote to award the contract to the winning bidder of the casting of lots. Mr. Mayor, your briefings continue.
All right, so we're now up to our first briefing item, Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Fiscal Year 2020 Proposed Budget, and I'll turn it over to our city manager, T.C. Broadnax.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and members of the City Council. The DFW International Board, Airport Board, is required to submit its annual budget to the owner cities of the Dallas-Fort Worth representation of that particular entity by August 15th for approval by September 30th of each year. As a reminder, the DFW Airport Board is a 12-member board. Dallas appoints 6 members to the board, and the Dallas mayor is also a member of that board, totaling 7 members from Dallas. Fort Worth appoints 3 members, and the Fort Worth mayor is also a member, totaling 4 members from Fort Worth. One non-voting board position represents one of the airport's 4 host cities, being Irving, Grapevine, Euless, and Coppell. The DFW Airport Board approved the FY 2020 budget on August 1st, 2019. This morning, Mr. Max Underwood, Vice President of Finance at DFW International Airport, will provide the briefing. This item is scheduled for council consideration and approval on August 28, 2019. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Underwood. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. City Manager, Mayor Johnson, and distinguished members of the Dallas City Council. I'm glad to be here to talk to you about DFW Airport's FY 2020 budget. I was here a couple of years ago to talk about the 18 budget. Let me just say this budget is an easier budget to talk about in terms of the increase, so I'm happy to do that. Before I begin, I'd like to introduce you to the DFW team that's here. First of all, Vernon Evans, a Fort Worth member of the board. Vernon, if you would stand. Vernon is actually a prior DFW CFO. He has done this on several occasions. He actually came to DFW, started the internal audit department. He's recently retired as CFO from the San Diego Airport Authority. And so I told Vernon as he came over that I asked him if he'd like to do this, but he graciously he declined. But we have Elaine Rodriguez, who is the airport general counsel. And then we have two members of our communication team, Frank Rodriguez and J.J. Callwalder. So let me begin here talking about some of the global metrics DFW does operate in the global environment. So we want to make sure we inform community leaders on where DFW stands. First, with regard to global flights, DFW is fourth in the international in flights. We are 15th in global, the number of passengers. We have 164 gates at DFW, and they're all being used. We have seven runways. Only one other airport has seven runways that DFW, but importantly, none of our runways intersect, so we have a large capacity for runways. We have 253 destinations, of which 63 are international, and we've had significant growth in that area. And as you see, DFW has a significant impact on the local economy. One item that's not up there is DFW actually is the third largest landmass of any airport internationally, about the size of the island of Manhattan. So if we go just and we look at for 2019, we are on schedule to be at 7.2 million in passengers. This is almost a 5% increase from 2018, led by American Airlines. Beginning in June, reached over 900 daily flights and has taken all of the gates in the East Satellite and has started mainline service in Terminal B. So if we look at the DFW business arrangement that was a result of the current use agreement that was put into play in 2011. We have three basic cost centers, and these are considered sort of profit and loss centers in which we base our rates. First, the airline cost centers in the airfield and in terminal. What we do is we take the cost of operating those cost centers, and then we divide that by either landed weights to get in our landing fees or terminal space for terminal rents. And those are known as residual. The airport does not make any money over those call centers. When we go over to the DFW call center, and this is where we made the change in 11, we have our non-aviation revenues, such as parking, concessions. And we take the revenues and the cost of those operations, and then we share a portion of those back to the airlines to reduce landing fees. And then we take another portion and use for capital. And this was the major change we made in 2011. Previously, the airport was fully residual. Okay, so if we look at just the overall themes of this year's budget, from an airline cost perspective, this is a very positive budget. In fact, if you looked at the three major airline cost components, all three of them are down for the first time that I can remember, and our airline cost increase is lower than it has been since 2011. And we look at costs for employment, landing fees, and terminal rents, all down from the previous year. Now, our forecast of passengers, again, we see the annualization of the increase in American Airlines, and so we're looking at a 4.6% increase, a record of almost 76 million in passengers. Now, the DFW cost center net income, we anticipate that's going to be $164 million, which is a 12.6% increase. And we'll be sharing about $70 million of those profits with the airlines and use the rest of them for capital at DFW. There is an increase of 2.3% in the budget. That's the lowest since 2014. And on the next slide, I'll talk a little bit more about the expenditures. Okay. All right. So look at our expenditure budget. It is a 2.3% increase. However, the largest increase in the budget is an item involving custodial for terminals A and C. Prior to this year, American Airlines has been responsible for the custodial terminal A and C. And, in fact, those are the two terminals in which historically we've had the lowest customer service scores. And so we have worked with American so that DFW will now be responsible for all of the custodial work at the airport, including A and C. Now, American paid those costs directly. Now they'll be put into the airport rates and charges, and they will pay them there too. This budget does fund strategic initiatives such as security, customer experience, and we'll talk about that in the next slide. And we do have fixed contract increases, our salary merit increases, but most importantly, this budget represents $15 million of cost savings. Typically, the DFW budget, we go to the June board. This year, we waited until August. We spent an extra couple of months in identifying cost savings. This was approximately 3% of each of the division's budgets. And so you can see at the bottom, we're ending up with a total expenditure budget increase of 2.7%. So if we go and we look at sort of the components of this increase, we talked about the cost savings and budget reductions. This would include, we looked at software, eliminating redundant modules, reduced consulting costs, looked at the way we scheduled overtime, and also looked at eliminating some one-time cost. In our strategic priorities, we do believe it is an important strategic priority so that DFW controls the entire custodial experience. And with the increase in passengers, we've had a lot of pressure on the custodial areas. Customer experience, these will include improvements such as, I don't know if you've recently been to DFW, you'll see TSA wait times, that and other increases in customer experience, including the opening of the East satellite. And safety and secure, this current year we had an unbudgeted filling of about 40 positions in security to correspond to TSA rules on employee screening. Additionally, we'll be hiring 10 new security and law enforcement officers in 2020. Operational excellence, we will be opening an integrated operations center in the near future, and so we're getting ready to open that center along with various innovation projects such as automated passenger bridges and self-service bag drops. The salary benefits and merit pool, the budget does include a 3% merit increase for employees and a 3.5% increase for fire and police officers, in addition to filling some positions that previously were unfilled. In contract increases, with the growing number of passengers, we've had increases in contracts for facility maintenance, technology, busing, and healthcare increases. The restored budget line speaks to the CEO contingency. We'll be using, including an increase of $2 million. This includes costs for roofing and waterproofing, piping assessment, custodial, and other areas. The other increase of 3.7 is various smaller issues within the departments, reflecting increases in things such as supplies and fingerprinting and signage. So that's a brief recap of the walk forward of the increase. So if we now want to look at, so how does the revenue fund the expenditures of the airport? You can see that our $32 million budget, about half of it is paid by the airlines through landing fees and terminal rents. Then we have 318. That's going to be the revenues net of the profit we keep to invest in capital from such sources as parking and concessions. The dark piece of the pie, $146 million, that's the $4.50 passenger facility rate that hasn't been changed in several years. And then the $66 million is primarily transfers from other funds to support the operating expenses. So that's the breakdown in terms of the revenue. And we talk about DFW cost center revenue. These are the non-aviation revenues. You can see an overall increase of 4%. So this tracks our increase in passengers. Parking is up a bit with regard to passengers. We have introduced this past year the online parking product. Currently, about 15% of folks who park at DFW use this online product. It offers discounts at various times. And so we are anticipating that will grow to almost 25% of passengers and will be using the online method in 2020. Concessions continues to be strong at DFW with almost 22 new locations opening up in FY 20 and FY 19, several new food and beverage locations, my favorite of which is Whataburger and Terminal E satellite. The rental car is coming down. It is pressure. Rental car companies are having competition, particularly from TNCs, and so they are not raising rates, and so we expect actually a decline in the rental car revenue. And commercial development, if you've been out to the airport, particularly on the southern sector, significant investment in logistics warehouses, and so we're seeing increases in ground rental rates for that logistics infrastructure. Miscellaneous is primarily interest income and permit fees. Now we talk about the 50% of the budget that's paid by the airlines. We pay very close attention to this because we want to remain competitive with other large hubs, and particularly the American airline hubs. This is the lowest increase in airline costs since 2011. In your budget book that you've been given, there is a schedule of the cost per employment by the large hubs. You'll see DFW continues to be competitive in that area. In fact, of the seven American airline hubs, we're the third lowest cost per employment. And you can see the metrics of all those three airline costs are going down. So this is a summary of the expenditure budget you're being asked to consider, $1,032,000,000. We do each year add a $10 million contingency for your approval, and this contingency is not included in our current rates, but it could only be accessed with DFW Airport Board approval during the year. And so the total is $1,042,000,000. Each year we do share with the cities of Dallas and Fort Worth the amount of monies that are transmitted from the host cities of Euless, Irving, and Coppell and Grapevine. There is a tax sharing agreement with Euless and Irving and Coppell, and in Grapevine there is a tax sharing agreement south of Highway 114. The area north of Highway 14, there is not a sharing agreement, and that's why you'll see there's no development in that area in Grapevine. So currently the revenues are split one-third with the host cities and two-thirds with the owner cities, with Dallas receiving 7/11 and 4/11 for Fort Worth, with the exception of the rental car facility in which those revenues are split 50-50. And so in FY18, Dallas received 7.6, Fort Worth 6.5, which is an increase of 5.6% from the prior year. This just regard next steps. As the city manager stated, there will be a full Dallas City Council consideration on August 28th. We'll be making the same presentation to the Fort Worth City Council on August the 27th, and then Fort Worth will consider it on September the 10th. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you have on the budget.
Councilman Kleiman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Max, very much for this presentation, and congratulations to DFW and the board for getting Airport of the Year Award.
Thank you. Very proud
of that.
Thank you.
Many of us travel a lot and see a lot of other airports, and there are a few airports like Kennedy. I'm surprised the family doesn't have the name taken off of that airport. So I'm very proud of what we've done here. I do have a question on the budget book that you put in here on page 16. We were talking about CPE. Cost per employment, and that's on.
Yes. Okay.
I don't know if we're going to put that up there or not. It's actually.
It's on page 16 of the budget book.
Right. Why is DFW's CPE so much higher than what I would consider our really competitive airports like Atlanta and Denver and Phoenix?
Okay. Well, with regard to Atlanta, their hub, they are. They have about 109 million passengers compared to our 70 million. And so many costs are fixed. And so the ability of Atlanta and Delta having fewer hubs than American, putting through that throughput drives that metric considerably.
Okay.
So that's going to be
sheer volume. I mean, they're just getting returns.
It's a volume driven.
Are they getting more turns per gate than we are?
Well, they'll, because Delta operates the majority of that, they will get a lot of turns. Proportionally, we probably have more international gates, and so some of those international gates are not used that often during the day.
And how heavily does the debt service component weigh on the CPE?
Well, our debt service is about half of the budget, so half of that light blue number is going to be related to debt service.
Half of the blue number. Okay.
Right. Okay. And so Atlanta is beginning a construction program, much like we did with the renovation of the existing terminals.
Okay. I just want us to just be I very much appreciate the reinvestment we're doing in DFW along the way because it's kept us current. And I know that there's a big plan for another terminal, which I'm generally pretty excited about. But I just think we've got to be careful that we don't get so heavily debt burdened that especially if there is a downturn in the industry, which there will be, that we're able to still do operate and maintain the airport at the high standards that the people in this region have come to expect, despite having to carry all that debt service. So I just want us to be cautious in that area.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Councilman West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just one question for one of the rookies here. I'm on the 7-11 split in revenue, and then there's the 50-50 split on rental car. How did the 50-50 come about? As opposed to it being set with the original metrics?
I wasn't here, but what I'm told is if you actually go back a little bit before, is the original split was based upon, and the voting was based upon the population, the relative population at the time that the airport was incorporated back in the late 60s. And so that's how that split came to be. With regard to the rental car, I honestly do not know. It actually, I believe, is located in Tarrant County, but I don't know how that was split. But we can certainly find out. Okay.
Councilman Atkins.
Just a simple question. Number one, we talked about decrease in revenue, looking at
parking is going down. I think a couple years was up and rentals going down. So is there any other revenue is going down?
Well, actually, when we talk about parking, we also include TNCs. We sort of include the whole universe. And what we're seeing is that the universe is actually for DFW has actually grown a bit. And that's why when we see parking, ground transportation, and TNCs, it's actually up a bit. And a good reason of that is we have implemented this online parking system that is supplementing the revenue. So we believe, you know, that is helping us maintain the current parking revenues. And clearly the market is shifting, and we're trying to adjust to that market. Thank you.
Councilwoman Blackman.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for coming in. So I do have a question about the commercial development that you said is going on.
Yes.
So that the profits that come from that, does that get put back into the airport, or does it go into how is it, and then how is that allocated with the sharing agreement with the revenues?
Okay.
Because I know that this is a big discussion on as DFW develops out. How, and my question is basically, how does the city of Dallas capture more revenue, but explain a little bit about that.
We share revenues such as commercial development, parking. We keep the first $70 million.
$70 million,
and anything over that threshold, we get to keep 25%. And then 75% of that goes back to lower landing fee rates. So let's assume that we're making incremental commercial development investments. So the airlines will get 75% of that revenue as a reduction of landing fees, and 25% of that will be retained at DFW for capital expenditures.
Okay.
So that's sort of how that works. And then based upon the location and the sharing agreement, property taxes or things like that will be shared one-third to the host city and two-thirds to the owner cities.
Okay.
So that's sort of how that works. Now, this is for the current agreement, and this is the last year of the current agreement. We're beginning negotiations with the airlines on how that sharing agreement may change.
And does that come back to your board or to the councils, or how is that agreement ratified?
The use agreement comes back to the board for approval. It does not go to
it. Doesn't come to us.
That's correct.
Okay.
Am I correct on that, Elaine?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilwoman Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. And this kind of an extension of Councilmember Blackman's question. I think, and I also want to go back to Councilman West's question. I think his question was regarding how the sharing is done. Initially, and I think Mr. Kleinman and I were just discussing. I think it was because regarding the initial investment. What Dallas put in for Fort Worth. Is that correct?
Well, and I think that it, too, was based upon relative population size at the time.
So there was a requirement.
And you're right, that initial investment was a, 411, 711.
So there was a determination of, okay, this is the population. You should share this portion. You should share this portion.
And that initial investment was made according to
the requirement. But now this, what you're just referring to, Ms. Blackman's, is the question regarding the shared agreement, how we
share revenues.
Yeah, revenues.
Tax revenues.
The tax revenue. Because
yes.
That's on page 12, that 7-6. So that's just sales taxes, right?
Sales tax, property tax.
Any tax. That's
correct.
It. Okay. Because there's limitations on what cities can benefit from regarding airport uses. Is that correct?
Not with regard to tax.
Well, not taxes, but other
with regard
type of
to revenue generated on airport.
Right. So we couldn't, we don't have
parking.
The ability to benefit from
parking,
from the parking or other
right.
developments other than the property tax and sales tax, correct?
Right. Parking, there is sales tax on that parking. So the tax portion of that is shared, but the revenue that's retained per FAA.
But if you were to sell any of the property, we wouldn't be that the sale of the property belongs to the airport, correct?
That's correct.
So it's not like that would if the airport made money on sale of a property, or we wouldn't generate that. And we can't generate any money directly on, the charges you have of landing fees or anything, because I think the purpose for those established rules was because they didn't want cities owning airports and, you know, charging the airlines money to fill their potholes.
Correct.
Is essentially, they wanted it to be contained at the airport. Is that? But that, the sale. That's, so
but
that share, so that so what's going to be up next year is how, if there would be any changes with regards to property tax and sales tax sharing. Is that correct?
No. When I talked about a use agreement, I'm talking about revenues such as concessions and parking revenues, not local tax revenue.
Okay.
So that's sharing with the airlines. How much goes to landing fees? How much do we retain for capital? That will be a point of negotiation in the airlines.
But that's really not going to affect any revenues to us.
No.
To the cities,
no,
the shared cities.
It is not.
Because that agreement is by just that agreement of how the sales tax is shared is established, and that won't be changing.
That is right. This is currently, it is with, except for the rental car facility, all taxes on airport property are shared 7-Elevens with Dallas and 4-Elevens with Fort Worth.
And then if you have the property tax is because there's other municipalities that the property sits on,
yes,
and they get they
get one third.
Third. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any more questions? Thank you very much. So we'll move on to our next briefing item now. Thank you so much, Mr. Underwood. Thank you. Our next briefing item is going to be an overview of our City Council Rules of Procedure. And for this presentation, I've asked staff to provide us with an overview of the current Rules of Procedure. And I want to do this because we have a lot of new members here, and I feel it's important for us to get a good understanding of the background and the history of the rules that we have in place now, understand the key amendments that have been made to the Council Rules of Procedures over the years, and to determine if there are any adjustments that need to be made that will ensure that our way of doing business here is as efficient as possible. So I think it's imperative that the rules are reviewed periodically and that we understand what the requirements of our city charter are. That's our governing document. Our rules are actually a result of an outcropping of the city charter. So I want to note that we've asked the appointed officers of our city. These are the folks who report directly to the council, the city manager, the city attorney, the city secretary, and our city auditor to also review these rules and propose any revisions that they think would be helpful to make sure they are able to do their jobs that we've hired them to do. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to our city secretary, our city attorney, and our city manager staff to brief us on the current rules.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning to the members of the City Council. I'm Kimberly Tolbert, Chief of Staff to our City Manager. Joining me for this presentation is Billy Ray Johnson, our City Secretary, and Tammy Palomino, the Chief of our General Counsel Division and the City Attorney's Office. As the Mayor mentioned, all of our offices work closely together in the administration and implementation of the rules, so this is a joint presentation. During the City Council onboarding process that we had in June, many of our new council members, you had an opportunity to actually receive a copy of the rules. They were reviewed during the City Attorney's section of our onboarding agenda. Today's presentation is really an opportunity, as the Mayor stated, to provide the City Council with a brief background and history of the rules. We will only highlight key sections of the rules. We will not go through the rules in great detail. And then we'll summarize for you within the last 10 years where there have actually been some amendments. We will then close with proposed steps, and those steps are really to provide a timeline for how, if this council chooses to make any revisions to the existing rules. So we can actually jump to slide 4, and Tammy will take over from here, and I'll come back and close out the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you. Like Kim said, several of you have already heard our overview of the rules, so we'll be brief. So I want to start with a little bit of a background. Our city charter provides that the city council has to adopt rules, a procedure governing the conduct of council committees, or council meetings provide guidelines to allow reasonable opportunity for the public to be heard, establish introduction, consideration, and methods by which actions are considered at council. The current rules were adopted in 1993. They're called the 1993 rules. We did some research, and thank you to the city secretary's office for helping. They have been amended multiple times, approximately 30 times over the past 26 years. The original rules were adopted actually in 1971 and consisted of only 5.5 pages. The rules are divided into 10 sections. Next slide. They include bracketed references to the charter. They include a lot of parliamentarian rules. They include state law references for things that the city is required to follow. And so they are also, like I said, divided into 10 sections. So you'll see the different references throughout the chart or the rules. So let's just go over the kind of topics of our rules. Authority I already talked about. And then meetings are very charter-based. They address the regular and special meetings, your public notice, your quorum, which is 9, participation, executive sessions, and so on. Your code of conduct is addressed for council members, staff, speakers, and visitors to the council. The duties and privileges of the members are very parliamentarian rule-based, and then we have attendance rules within that particular section as well. Our section 5, talks about the chair's duties, who presides at the meetings, the call to order, again, very much parliamentarian rules of how the meeting is conducted. Next. Our order of business addresses your agenda preparation, distribution, the briefing meetings, the start times, the agenda meetings, our 5-signature memo, which is the presentation by members, the speaker rules, registration, the time limits, open microphone, and communications to the mayor and to the city council, as well as public hearings. Under Section 7, it's consideration of ordinances, resolutions, and motions, really discussing approval, distribution, your rules of order, order of precedent for motions, and other Robert's rules or parliamentary rules, and also deferral of an agenda item and moratoriums. Next slide. Section 8 talks about the votes that are required for certain actions. Some of these are charter-based. Some are state law required, and then others are just council rules or Robert's Rules of Order-based. So ordinarily, your ordinances, resolutions, and motions are majority, but there is a state law requirement in any zoning ordinance that if there is a 20% opposition, it requires 3/4 vote. That's state law-driven. Others are charter-based, removal of certain officers, establishing departments, expulsion of members. Those are all charter-based, and moratoriums are state law, and the previous question is a Robert's Rule of Order. Your committees are established, and the rules for appointment and meetings and the ad hoc committees, your agendas and other information are part of Section 9. And then finally, you have a very short section talking about rules of suspension or amendment. Next slide. We took a look at some of the amendments over the past 10 years and just summarized them. So we went back to 2009, as you can see. On this page, you'll see 3 times council has, over the 5-year period, 4-year period, amended committees. We've added the rule regarding 50% absence from a meeting. We updated our rules to allow for you to register by email. We added that no person could speak more than 30 times in any, more than once, sorry, within a 30-day period. Next. And then more recently, we made a correction to the rules based on a charter amendment that dealt with conflicts and then days that you can hold your meetings and when they're set. I didn't mention on the previous slide, but we had adopted a rule at one point that said you had to have 2 seconds for a main motion on designated public subsidies and zoning cases. And then we deleted that rule in 2017. We have your current committees were amended in 2017 to reflect the city manager's organizational structure, his strategic goals, and operations. And then very recently, we did a five-person memo format or form that's required to be filled out and a resolution or ordinance adopted. And then our last amendment was the speaker times, how many and how much time you get per round. So that's kind of the quick summary of the rules and what we've done more recently.
Thank you, Tammy. The next slide. So just in summary, this is a proposed timeline. The council can choose something totally different. But the goal today was to actually give you an opportunity to just get the summary of the existing rules, getting any feedback from the council. We would be proposing that any additional feedback as it relates to changes or additional revisions or additions to the rules be actually submitted to the mayor's office, between our city manager's office, city attorney's office, city secretary's office, and the city auditor's office. We will actually be reviewing the rules as well as directed and requested by the mayor. And then we would combine all of the feedback that's received from the council and those offices and provide that back to the council around the August 21st timeframe. Depending on where we are at that point, if the council chooses for those amendments, if there are any, to move forward, we could bring those back for council consideration at the August 28th voting agenda. So, again, this is just a proposed timeline to give some order to how you'd like to proceed. And at this time, we will stop and take questions from the council. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much. So, again, just to kind of quickly recap why we're doing this, we want to get the council's feedback on the rules according. We want them laid out today, but for you to, you know, after this meeting, take your time, think about things that you think when you look at the rules that should be changed, and submit your proposed changes to our office. And we're asking the direct reports to the city council who work for us to do the exact same thing. So they're making their proposed changes too, and then we'll go through a process of actually adopting new rules that reflect everybody's collective input on that. So that's why that's the process we're trying to establish here. So Councilwoman Gates.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for the presentation. I served on the previously on the, I think we called it the administrative ad hoc, where we brought these changes, the last couple changes we made through. But when I reviewed the actual council rules of procedure, I noted a couple things, and I'll go through those. But first, I just had a question, and this is just for informational. You know, we have the quorum is 9, but a simple majority is 8. Like, why is it, I'm curious, is the quorum a definition that was in the charter? Or?
Yes, it's 9 in the charter.
Okay, so that's why we have the quorum, yes, of 9. Mm-hmm. And I think I read, though, that if you did happen to have, for vacancy reasons, if you're less than 9, it's whatever you have. Is that
it's
correct?
The entire body.
Okay, but that's that's all charter.
Yes.
Okay. And charter changes have to go to the voters and committee, so those are different. Okay. In Section 2, it reads, and this isn't in the briefing, this is actually from the website. It says that regular meetings, it refers to our first meeting, and this is Section 2.1, mm-hmm. And it says it's at 11 o'clock on the day of inauguration. I mean, by practice, we do 1, so I think maybe we should consider.
I've noted that as well.
Okay. And then Section 4, the seating arrangements, it says that the mayor assigns it. And we've had the tradition that we pick by, so I would say 4.1, mm-hmm. Is assigned to them by the mayor. So since we practice, I mean, I would just go by making a recommendation. And I guess what you're asking is we write these down.
Yeah.
But we don't go by that practice, the practice that we have, I think is suitable. I would support that. And then on pay, 6.6, the public hearing. I'm going to look through that. I think those are a little confused. I don't have a specific question on that, but I'm going to kind of go through that. I think there's some confusing parts of that. On 7-11, we talk about deferrals of items. And I think there's a practice we do, I think council members have utilized this, but it does say that we have to, when that's included, that you have the intent of the deferral, and I don't think we've asked for that. Point two, the special meetings that can be called by three council members.
Mm-hmm.
What's the history of that?
That's the charter. That's in the charter. That really, I made a note to change the reference instead of just rules of procedure.
Yeah, that says rules of procedure.
It should say charter.
Okay.
Say the charter.
Okay, because I wondered if that could be changed. So that can't be changed.
No.
Okay. And then in section nine, we talked about the city council committees. And the appointments are made by the mayor. It doesn't really discuss how they're established. And we changed it when we had when we aligned them with the council manager's priorities. So do you have a recommendation? Should we explain how they're established? Or has it just been the practice that the mayor establishes those committees?
From looking back in the history of the changes, they are typically driven from the mayor's office.
Okay. Well, I'd be supportive of actually establishing that a mayor establishes the committees. It just says committees established, and it doesn't have any direction on how they're established. So I think
the full council has to vote on them, of course.
Oh, okay. But
yes.
They...
Mm-hmm. That is in the charter, yes. The charter says...
Okay.
Yes.
I also noted that regarding meetings, we made the change last year, and I guess we made the change by adopting the calendar for the afternoon meetings, but that's not in these council rules and procedures. We didn't amend that when we went to the afternoon meetings.
The rules at the beginning of the council rules say that you can set the dates and the times of your meetings. And so they're set in the calendar, but also the rules talk about Wednesday-driven type meetings.
So we didn't need to change the, or having that, we didn't need to change.
We changed the rules and the calendar. So we changed the rules because it focused on the second meeting. The first agenda meeting of the month, so we incorporated that into the rules. Your rules talk about when you have your public hearings and when your meetings start, generally on Wednesdays, and so we amended that.
I don't see the amendment in the rules referring to that time.
It is in Rule 6.1B, or I'm sorry, C. On page 11, it talks about the voting agenda meetings, mm-hmm. when they are, the time they begin, when public hearings start.
Yeah, and so on 6C, it says 9 a.m. The meetings, the second and fourth Wednesday of each month shall be held and shall begin at 9 a.m.
My rules are dated 12/18/18, they do reference the, on the second Wednesday, the voting agenda meeting shall begin at 2. On the fourth Wednesday, the voting agenda shall begin at 9 a.m.
Okay, those are not online.
Are the rules that you're looking at dated February 28th, 2018?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then that's not the recent copy of the rules.
Okay, so that's,
so, we,
so
yes.
there is, so.
There is an updated version.
They're posted on the city secretary's website.
I'm on the city's website right now, so I don't know.
Sometimes if you search for them, that's the first thing that comes up is that particular set of rules. I'm not sure why.
Okay, so I need to find, what's the last date then? 12/18/18. And I think my time's up, so thanks.
No, I appreciate your questions and comments, Councilwoman. I just want to make sure everybody understands that you will have another opportunity besides today to get all of your stuff. You're going to get all these comments and questions submitted so we can work on this again as a group. But Deputy Mayor Pro Tem, actually, Magoo. I'm sorry. I didn't see Councilwoman Blackman's light. I had to come on first, so I apologize.
You'd like to go, you're ready to go.
So, okay, thank you. Thanks for the update. Can y'all explain the process that's been happening with the committee structure in the last, because I know there was some confusion, and I think, Tammy, you and I had a conversation about there was something that was passed on through a committee, but it didn't get on the agenda, and it's because there was, like, needed a certain memo now. And so it was my understanding that if a committee voted on something, it got put on the agenda and moved forward. So I was just wanting to understand where that is and what a practice has been and what's written and if there's clarification that is needed.
One of my suggestions will be clarifying that under Rule 6.2. Okay, so under 6.2, it requires for the mayor to place an item on the agenda, a policy item. It's going to require either a five-signature memo or going to the mayor and asking him to place it on the agenda, or a committee by memorandum can request that.
By the chair.
By the chair, yes.
Action by the committee,
yeah.
For clarification.
Yes, in fact, former council member Grayson for the ad hoc committee would send a memorandum to the mayor saying that these are the items they wanted placed on the agenda, and then that 30-day rule would apply. So that's 6.2.
The 30-day rule will apply.
It does apply.
At the discretion of the mayor, because you can just put it on immediately.
He could, and that would be his item if he wanted to do that. The other part of the rule, though, is under your committee rules, it says a committee, standing committee may by majority vote recommend action to the city council, but they're not necessary for matters to be placed on the agenda. And the committees are advisory, so they...
And is that by us, or is that by charter?
So they don't, well, it's...
Is it by...
It's kind of a... I would...
Practice?
I would say it's really kind of a state law.
Okay.
How you govern. A committee of the whole cannot make a decision that's binding on the full body.
Right. But to move to the full body for consideration, is that governed by law?
I think... No, you could change that rule.
That process.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do feel that... In Mayor, you know this, being at the state, most work is done at the committee level, and that's where you get really intimate information and really go deep into things to bring to a full body, with your chair usually being the one presiding over that discussion, you know, like kind of taking on the discussion. And I feel that sometimes has been lost, which is why we get the five signature memos that causes all this policy to happen at the day at the round the horseshoe, which is really not a fair public policy process. And so I definitely would love to see that kind of clarified in a governing, in a thoughtful way. So the question is, do you want us to put a memo together for your office to send to you, or do you want how that way it doesn't get lost and it's not an email and that is a, because this will determine how we act for the next 2 years.
Well, first of all, I think your comments are very well taken, and I appreciate them. I'm somewhat agnostic about the form that you communicate these to me. I just want to make sure we hear from you. So whatever is the form of communication you feel most comfortable with and that you feel will be able to fully explain, you know, what you want to see done and why, that's fine. So I'm not going to circumscribe a manner that you have to communicate this in, but we would like to know what you want to do.
Okay. And I will say, given our retreat this weekend and given the direction that the city manager or the committees that are happening, there's a lot of blending that probably needs to happen. And so I guess on the committee side, the committees itself, we put forth and you can use and not use as needed. But I do think that there's a lot of blending that does need to happen in to reach goals that are needed for our city. Another quick question, the charter review. I think we're not up yet, but has there been any indicator of any, I mean, I guess you can keep that on.
Well, I'm saying I think you probably should, the city attorney would be better to answer the question about that part of the process, but... I mean, you have time to have. You can get that question if you want.
When was the last time the city charter was reviewed?
It was 2013, and the voters approved the changes in 2014.
Okay.
And so it's not
2024 is not mandated, right?
It's I always get the language wrong, but I think it's not more than every 10 years.
And is that a mayor, or does the mayor call it, or is the eight or nine?
There's a commission that's established.
It's a call of the commission.
I don't have that.
I can't remember who is the one who actually.
I'd have to look, Billy Ray, do you know who it is?
I think it's the mayor.
The whole council.
The whole council.
Okay. And it's just a simple majority?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
I should have gone first. I had two questions. One was, how's the committee get an item to the agenda? And the other was, while the law says it can't go longer than 10 years, we can do a charter review. If the mayor and this body decided to, we could make charter changes this year. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you so much. Councilwoman Gates. No, you're on your first round. Oh, you're on your second round of the rules. Yep.
Do you want somebody else in front of me then?
Was there anybody else? We have two more who've jumped in. So, Councilwoman Arnold, before we got to Council.
All right, thank you. Woman I Gates. Want to just get clarification before I submit my recommendations. Under the duties and privileges of members, I have some concern on the voting. How can we, could you give me a brief history on how we get to voice votes? Is there something written, or is that just something we
it's
just...
I think it's based, this is my, just knowing Robert's Rules of Order and parliamentary rules, it's based on that. But I believe there is something in the charter that talks about that.
Could you help me find that? I just find it to be confusing if we do voice vote. And I'm just would like to know from the city secretary, how do you keep up with when we vote for the record? How do we account for that?
It's two ways. One, our office, we do video meetings, okay. And we will go back and review the video to determine who actually placed their vote, how council members placed their vote. If we cannot determine how council members have placed their vote, then our language will be by general consensus.
Okay. So I'm speaking to that because I think sometimes we may get a directive based on the boldness of the sound of the voices, and we're not getting accuracy on whether or not we're really voting. And so I would like to speak to that because I think it's very important as we hold accountability, hold us accountable on certain issues. So I needed to find that out. The other question quickly, what is the protest? Are the protests from the council member under four? It says personal privilege, protest. Are we speaking about protest?
I believe.
It's a number. It's on slide. What is this? Three. Slide five. Are you speaking of? It says duty and privileges of members.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to get to
no
that
problem.
Particular. It's expression of dissent. You what you on the record are saying that you don't agree or that you're not going to vote for something. So it says any member shall have the right to express dissent from or protest against any ordinance, resolution, or other action council and have the reason for the dissent entered into the minutes.
Okay, we can put that into the into mm-hmm. So from a procedural part, I guess I need to talk with y'all on just how we would do that after the vote in terms of how I would state it. Do I just say mayor, council, be recognized for a protest? I don't mind protesting.
You don't have to actually say. You just be recognized and state on the record whether you're supporting or not supporting and then the reason why. And Billy Ray, do you put that in the record?
No.
So that would come before. I guess we'll talk in private. I need to know if it come before or after because I think sometimes it's good for us to go on the record so that we have that rationale if we didn't get to put it in. And the last thing I think is on the abstention. If we abstain, I think I read somewhere. Where is that in the rules?
Under voting, I think it's under four.
Well, I know there was some a member who did it, and it is on the record.
the council, well, the charter does not allow you to abstain. If you are in the room, you shall vote yes or no.
All right, because I think if I'll go back and we'll look at that record, because I think a council member did do that, and I was wondering how that was done.
I think that person left the room.
They walked the vote, they leave the room.
No, they didn't walk the vote. They were sitting here. We can go back and talk. So we'll talk about that.
Okay.
I just want to get clarification on that. That's all I have for right now. I just need to get the understanding on the voting and the voice voting, because I think we need to be on the record every time we vote. Thank you.
Before I recognize you, Councilman, or Senator, I will say, I do think that's an area that we probably ought to, I'm glad you raised it. So in your comments, make sure you really talk about that, because I do think the voting procedures around here are, I will say, are new to me too. You know, how we do it here, and how we go about sort of registering our support for something in the House. You know, when you do a voice vote, it's assumed that, you know, when the ayes have it, if you want to register your not agreement with the ayes, you have to go separately to the clerk, which would be like city secretary, and you can do that after the session. You don't have to do it during real time, and just say, on record vote number so-and-so, show me as having been opposed. And you can sort of get it on the record that way. We need to think through, you know, all these things, how to make it work the way you guys want it to work. But we want voting to reflect the will of the members, since you're representing your districts and you want to be on record as, you know, how you actually feel on an item. And so we need to think through that stuff. So, Councilman Resendez.
I just had one question. And as one of the new members here, I was curious to know, based on y'all's experience and exposure to the rules of procedure, if there are any particular sections that you all think we should focus on, or overarching themes that we should be aware of that have the most potential to make our meetings more efficient, transparent, and just easier to understand if we make some changes to those sections.
You know, I would agree with Mayor Johnson, in my opinion, Section 4 and the voting, making that clear.
Ms. Kim? My turn. I'd like to defer to the city manager. I think we will go through the process of sending, the rules out to our staff. Wanted to have the opportunity to talk about the existing rules today, but as part of this process, we will definitely have some recommendations that we would make to certain sections. Can talk to you about some of those sections maybe offline once we've kind of gotten our hands around all of them, but it probably will be Section 4. I think Section 6 would be one of the areas that I think we would like to better understand that process, and that does deal with the process around the 5-signature memos. I think that there is some confusion even on our end as to how we can make that process a lot smoother. So we can definitely share that as part of the effort that the council will be doing. We'll be doing the exact same thing.
Chris and I have also been looking at the rules and some of the items that Councilmember Gates pointed out. I have been focusing on, because if they're antiquated rules or they're just not making sense, we need to clarify them, including committee rules and how things work a little bit clearer, just clarifying some things.
Councilwoman Arnold, you for a second
just
round?
Quick, yes. Sure. On the other piece that gives us, I know it causes a little bit of confusion, I think we need to look at council members is how we make them, how we submit amendments around the horseshoe. There are times when we're amending the amendment and no one restates it, and the audience is lost, we're lost, and we're trying to vote on it. So I think we need to add clarity to that. We went through that this morning in terms of, okay, whose amendment is on the floor? We voting on this amendment. That it needs to be restated, I think, and required. Either we restate, or either if it's too cumbersome, we need to take time to at least have that office manager type it up so that we'll understand what we're voting on, because it is hard. It's horrible as we enter in this conversation and people are just absolutely lost, and then we're too proud to admit to the fact that we don't even know what we're voting on.
Thank you. That's a great point. Councilwoman Gates, second round.
Thanks. And thank you for bringing up about the committees, because I when you look at Section 9, it talks about committees. It is unclear on how
it doesn't actually allow for a committee to send something directly to the agenda, so that needs to be clarified in that process. I agree with that. And then I also think, you know, it's not clear. There's no, we're talking about committees. We currently have some traditional task force that we've had in place. I don't know if the task force is the best term, because then sometimes we use a task force like we did like Car for Hire, that we established a task force to deal with an issue that we're just working through and then it goes away. So we could maybe introduce, you know, the differences between those traditional task force, like the one I've chaired in the past, is domestic violence, and it is an opportunity where we bring people that are outside of, so it's not a committee, because it's, committees have to be just council members, and these include members from the community, but there's not any reference that those exist or don't exist, so I don't know if that's something we want to potentially take up, if there's ones that we think we should have in place at all times, and what their name should be. And then the option that we do when we're dealing with particular issues to establish a temporary task force that can include both council members and people, committee members, when we're trying to charge with an issue, something like we do with economic development, or we've done it with different topics. And then the other, there was one other question I had. I can't find where my note. Maybe those are it. That's all I do. If I found it, I'll ask for a third round, but I think that might have been it. Thanks.
Not seeing anyone else with questions, so if there aren't any more questions for our direct reports to the – oh, go ahead, please. Round three.
Okay,
no,
sorry.
No, excuse me.
I thought of it. I thought I wrote it down, but I didn't. If we have off-site meetings, which we now established, or if we have special call meetings, they don't go towards our attendance. And that – is that a rules of procedure, or is that charter?
It's charter.
Oh, that's charter, so that can't be changed. Because I actually think we should be required to attend those meetings, but or they should – be reflective in our attendance, but that would have to be a charter change. That's not this.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. With that, thank you very much. And we will turn back to our remaining open microphone speakers. Madam City Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council, shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Johnson only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. We'll begin with Beverly Full of Love.
Well, Mr. Mayor, in his absence, council members, I am Beverly Full of Love. I am 71 years old, and this air conditioning that I've been enjoyed this morning is not, it's not really a thing for me. I am literally burning up at home, and this is coming from one of the recommendations from the Major Dallas Major Systems Repair Program, which is for people my age or disabled. It recommended that the HVAC system be replaced. The system was installed August 2013. And from day one, up until this present moment, there is something wrong with the system. I attempted to keep it maintained, but it has gone past being kept maintained. It is caused, actually, I've bought another one with the upkeep. I could not understand that this was sent, it was to be a new apparatus, but it really was not. It was also important for me to have a release of lien on this property. The lien matured 9/6/2018. And this was a big concern of mine. I did secure the lien on 5/14/19. What do I want to happen? I want a new system that works, coming from a vendor of my choosing. My house is unlivable with heat. Anything other than a new workable system is unacceptable. Benefit, I started to leave, just let this issue go, but I couldn't, because it is my belief that others have had the same problem. And I thank you for listening to me, and I thank you for a positive solution.
Dolores Phillips.
Dolores Phillips' address is going to be
five. I'm sorry, one second. I didn't get quite to my seat in time to recognize Councilman Basildu, who I think wanted to say something to the last speaker.
Yes, okay. Just want to, Ms. Beverly, if we could, if my office can please speak to you before you leave today. I think we've been playing phone tag back and forth. You've left voicemails, we've left voicemails, but this is something that we want to prioritize since you're in the building, if you don't mind. Yes, ma'am. We'll get somebody over to you. Thank you.
Dolores Phillips.
Dolores Phillips' address is going to be 567 West Dickey Road, Apartment A, Grand Prairie, Texas, 75051. You do have handouts, pages 1 through 13. You are to reference the page number circled in the lower right-hand corner. In respect to Honorable Johnson, who has inherited a city in crisis and a police department torn to pieces, to understand why you have 600 officers short at DPD, 99.9% of the officers on the Brady's list being set up to fail, and should be given the opportunity to redeem themselves, is to look at the fabricated police report. If you turn to page 5-7, that letter was sent October 23rd, 2013, two days prior to October 25th, 2013, the day of premeditated Green Oaks. Mayor Rollins prearranged that meeting 2 to 3 weeks prior. I drove to DPD with a 3.0. I graduated less than 6 weeks later with that same 3.0. Please allow me to open and say, on record at DPS, by me, is a complaint to investigate DPD. I said I was going to be knocking on your door, and I'm humbly endured those repercussions then, now, and continuing. DPS is here now. They have to learn how to engage with the community, because they've never done that. I said, and I humbly stated, I was going to be knocking on your door. I don't war conflict with police or law enforcement. I believe they're overworked and underpaid. Honorable Johnson, will you please turn to page 8? It states that there was hands and feet used as weapons. It was never an argument. It was never any altercation. I was never unruly. It was premeditated by Mayor Rollins. And this is sinisterly sarcastic to him. That's fine. I've contacted the United States Department of Justice, FBI, but they said it doesn't happen overnight.
I'm going to keep knocking. To my sisters beyond race, who methodically place yourselves in my path, I need you to understand this from the words that are coming out of my mouth so that you don't misconstrue the words that you read that I write. Rosa McGowan said that Harvey Weinstein disgusted her, and I believe her to be telling the truth. Andrea Constant said that Bill Cosby made her sick to this very day, 30-some years later. To every female beyond race, beyond your sexuality, I love you. I'll do anything for you. But if you methodically harass me, I feel for you as Andrea Constant feels for Bill Cosby and as Rosa McGowan feels for Harvey Weinstein. Honorable Johnson, you have a problem on your hand. I have requested sexual harassment complaints to say that they're victims one to another and that that fabricated police report is a reflection of why
Thank
you have
you,
600 officers gone. Thank you for allowing me to
speak. Thank you, ma'am.
Brandon Hutchins? Not present. Angela Denise Green?
Good morning, Mayor Eric Johnson. The subject of what I have to say has actually changed from when we initially came to, when we initially registered to see you. My subject now is an oversentence and a denial of medical release that has resulted in a death. Allow me an opportunity to just read a brief statement that can be found on change.org by my sister, LaTanya DeGale Sessions Dukes. My sister writes in her petition, "This letter is to bring your attention to my husband, Jerron Dante Dukes, case number F1747055N. His constitutional rights were violated. I thought that the law and the rights were put in place to protect us. I didn't know that retired judges or law enforcement could pick and choose which laws they wanted to uphold and which ones they don't. Or maybe it's just my husband's skin color or the way he looks or smells in his dreadlocks. Or maybe it's, as the judge said, no to my husband, your kind. Whatever that means, my husband, Jerron Dukes, is good, caring, loving, God-fearing husband, father, and family man. He loves God first above all things. My husband, Jerron, is an innocent man doing 18 years for a crime he did not commit. Jerron was not allowed to hire his own legal representative. With that being said, my sister's name is LaTanya DeGale Sessions Dukes, who took her last breath on August the 29th as a citizen of Dallas, Texas. She was with me as I prepared to move out of my residence in Irving, Texas, to move in with her. My sister was on dialysis, and her doctor, Dr. Kuman, wrote a letter to the state indicating my sister had approximately 6 months maximum to live. My sister followed every letter of the law to ensure that her husband could get a medical release so that he could donate a kidney to her because he was a perfect kidney donor. My brother-in-law received 18 years for resisting arrest in the city of Dallas. The maximum standard sentence for that is 2 to 10 years. I am just a messenger reminder here to remind all of us that we are placed in this earth to do good for people, regardless as to what we think about them as a person. Something could have been done, and my sister could have lived to been here to speak to you on her behalf herself.
Thank you, ma'am.
Sherry Lowe, not present. Christopher Brown, not present. Peter Johnson, not present. Jerry David Russell,
good morning, City Council, Mayor.
My name is Jerry David Russell. I am a resident at 511 North Ackard, City Walk at Ackard, headquarters of City Square. I'm also a veteran on the HUD VASH program. The last time I came to speak in front of City Hall was before I got into HUD VASH, with the availability of acceptable housing in the city of Dallas for people on a voucher. I got in it where I wanted to be, downtown. 6 months later, I got a job at Active Network, which is headquartered here in Dallas. For 3 years, we did not get a raise. And then after Trump was elected, he passed the tax cut. 3 months later, we got a dollar raise. And then we were told 2 more months, our jobs were going to be sent to the Philippines. So we trained our replacements. They gave us a severance, which was cool, and they said they weren't going to fight unemployment, which was cool. Then when I filed for unemployment, they said I couldn't get it because I owed the state $5,000 in unemployment benefits from 2011. And I came seeking your help, Mayor, in 2011 when you were a state representative, because what happened is the state originally sided with me because I was fired illegally. I had diabetes. I had perfect attendance, met all my sales quotas, but Verizon Fios was going through a restructuring, and they needed to cut people. So they fired over 300,000 people. Americans with Disabilities Act filed a lawsuit. They lost. I got a settlement. So I quit fighting to get my unemployment benefits back because I thought, well, the nation sided with me. The state should as well. So I thought it was done. Here we are 10 years later, well, almost 10 years later, and I can't get unemployment benefits because the state says I owe them $5,000. I'm unemployed. I haven't worked for a whole year. I'm fighting to keep my food stamps. I did like Trump said. I went and got a DBA, an LLC, an EIN. I have talked with a couple of people already through the state that's going to try to help me get my business started. My business is a PR firm because I deal with urban specialists who are out to interrupt the culture of violence in Dallas, Galaxy 9 Productions in Deep Ellum, Afrima, which is the African music magazine. So I'm highly connected in music, fashion. It's just I don't have the advocacy to get the funds needed for the equipment to where I can be competitive. And that's why I came to seek help, to see what kind of departments that can help me become an entrepreneur in the city of Dallas.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sherry Lowe.
Good morning. My name is Sherry Lowe. I wanted to come before the city council and the mayor as well and request that, well, my statement is this, is that there have been Mexican-American officers colluding against Chief Hall, and I'm asking that you not fire her and let her stay as chief of police. Also, the contract that the city of Dallas has with Bank of America in regards to allowing them to provide loans for the housing program or purchasing homes here in the city of Dallas, I'm asking that that contract be terminated, and the reason being is because of the redlining practices of Bank of America. When I went to Bank of America to cash a check, and it had Bank of America on there, the check was given to me by GEICO, my insurance company. The bank manager, Roger Belmontes, called the police and said that I was irate. Now, me being irate, asking him if it was my race, because they had allowed all the colored people, all the white people to come through and cash their checks. But the minute that color people were coming through, we had to go through a different process of getting the check verified. Now, this just didn't happen at the Cocker Hill location. This happens in every Bank of America located in the southern sector of Dallas. And that in itself is a problem, because the policy in itself is a violation of the Uniform Commercial Codes and dealing with the instruments that are provided. Also, in regards to the southern sector, the police officers, DPS, stopping people, they have they're doing a stop and search, which is illegal. The people have not been informed of their rights, their tires. That's not a criminal offense. Any ticket that they render to them is civil, and it's not criminal. But the thing is this, is that my main point here today is that Chief Hall should stay in the position that she's in. They are not happy with the changes that she's making, but I ask that the city council and the mayor ask that you all consider allowing her to stay her tenure. And that's reasonable. And congratulations, Eric. Oh,
thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Sean Goldhammer? Not present. Mark York?
Good morning, City Council, Mayor. Congratulations to all our new City Council members that recently got elected. I represent the Dallas AFL-CIO, also live in District 1. Congratulations to the ones that got reelected and the new ones. And we want you to know how much labor really feels wonderful about our new shoe here. You know, I'm here to talk about the paid sick leave. Some of us were raised without sick leave. I know in my family, my mother and father had to work. Some of you on this council's parents had to work. Some of you have family there was enough money where you didn't have this problem. If you grew up with this problem, you would understand how important helping 300,000 workers are. For those that have a problem with the ordinance, if I could suggest, instead of trying to derail it, maybe we could try to fix your issues with it to make it fair if you feel it's unfair for companies. And the same way with workers, I've heard a lot of complaints from workers that aren't happy with certain rules in there too, but it's negotiations and working together. I have a friend who, when my wife was killed in an accident, was the first person to call me. He grew up in southern South Dallas in the poorest section of the ghetto. He went to bed hungry every night. His parents didn't have health care, and he watched them come and go. The chances of him getting out of southern Dallas alive was slim to none. But he stayed home every night and worked hard and was a good son. He went on to become an attorney against all odds. He came out of the ghetto in South Dallas. Then he went on to be state rep against all odds. And he remembered where he came from, went down to Austin, fought for working families, fought racism, and was a hero for labor. Then he went on to become our mayor. Have no doubt, we have elected probably the best mayor we're ever going to see in Dallas as we go forward. Because I know for a fact he's the type of man that's not going to forget where he came from. And I ask you folks on the shoe, don't forget where you came from. If your parents had to go to work when you were sick, what was it like? And if they didn't, put yourself in other people's shoes. Not everybody is wealthy. I have 7 seconds. Once again, on behalf of the Dallas AFL-CIO, we're looking forward to working with every single one of you. We're not going to agree all the time. I understand that. But as long as we're able to communicate and work for what's best for Dallas, we will have a wonderful relationship. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, sir.
Kenya Nelson? Not present. Christopher Anderson?
Howdy. You might remember me. I was here last month. Proclamation from the governor. Key to the city of Dallas. I have 60 more. Chief of staff of the U.S. Army calls me an American hero. I'm carrying his personal challenge coin. I've set 2 world records for the American Cancer Society, the American Red Cross, Salvation Army, doing the hardest bike ride in human history, 19 months, 13,500 miles all over America to heal the sick, feed the poor with 3 amazing charities. Now, in the past, I'd been in like 1,000 newspapers, 300 TV stations, 4 national programs. But for some reason, the press has been ignoring this trip, the one, my last after a 44-year career, that should have been the best and should have raised millions. People don't know about it. You know what the Dallas Morning News ran instead of me? They had a front page of a swimming pool. That didn't help anybody. Now, maybe you don't like my politics. I'm like, well, let's not do it the Republican way. Let's not do it the Democratic way. How about we just do it the right way, whatever way that is, and the facts ought to show what it is. Or maybe they don't like I'm a Christian, and I've been doing this stuff for 44 years. This is like my 5th or 6th world record. 2 presidents have written to thank me, and I'm one of the most decorated charitable volunteers in history. Well, Jesus said, heal the sick, feed the poor, pick up your cross, and follow me. I like that. Look, I don't care what you believe as long as you don't hurt nobody. That's really not my business. But healing the sick, feeding the poor, doing the best that I can to make it a better world, that is my business. And it used to be the press's business. Like I said, I've been in all these newspapers. You can Google me. Google Cody Anderson, biking for charity. I'll come up. I rode 90 hours without sleep on a fully loaded bike. Do you know that, like, 98% of the human population can't do that, and I'm 64 years old. I pulled a 300-pound covered wagon across the United States for the American Heart Association in 1979 to 1980. That's the hardest walk in human history. Nobody's even tried to beat it. I bicycled to the Holy Land as Gainesville, Florida's official ambassador in 2016, and at the Western Wall, Israel's holiest place, Dome of the Rock sitting right above me, I walked 3 days and nights without sleep for Israel's oldest charity that feeds the needy, a running charity that feeds the needy. I didn't care, just freaking feed somebody. There's hungry people out there. That's called noble, honorable deeds. And that sure as heck outweighs a swimming pool. I've been protesting at Dallas Morning News for a month now. Oh yeah, I've been here. Sharing it out on the internet. If they wanted to help these 3 charities, if they really cared about making it a better world, all they had to do is step out their door and interview an American hero saving lives. Now, I asked you all to do something about it last time. I haven't heard anything from any of you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
This concludes your speakers for this meeting.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. It is 11:26 on August 7th, 2019, and the City Council briefing meeting will now go into a closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. Number 1, the ESI/Employee Solutions LP et al. Versus City of Dallas et al. And legal issues related to the earned paid sick leave ordinance, and 2, Kelvion Walker versus Amy Wilburn, and under Section 551.087 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to deliberate the offer of a financial or other incentive to a business prospect, Project X, that the city seeks to locate or relocate within the city and with which the city is conducting economic development negotiations. Okay. The city council briefing meeting has completed its closed session under section 551.071 and 551.087 of the Texas Open Meetings Act. And at 3 o'clock p.m. on August 7, 2019, we've returned to open session. Okay. Open session has, we've gone back into session, and now the time being 3:01 p.m., this meeting of the Dallas City Council is now adjourned. Thank you very much.